And welcome and good evening, everybody. And this is the Whole Agenda Radio Show. I am your host, Robert Pepino. And tonight is Wednesday, May 16th, 2012. And we have a very special, incredible guest who I've always held dear to my heart. He's actually been one of my heroes for a long, long time. I've been listening to this man, as you all know, the show Coast to Coast for years and years and years. I basically grew up with him and many others like him who've brought the truth forward. And if it wasn't for men like Mr. Stan Deo, we would not know half of the things that have been kept from us. But Stan Deo has been above top secret, or excuse me, has had above top secret clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in development of flying saucer technology in 1969. Stan experienced a near-death experience, which only strengthened his faith, though at that time, he was not a believer. Stan's scientific approach is backed by extensive research. He is not motivated by making a quick buck, ladies and gentlemen, nor is he trying to sell anything other than his books that are treasured by those who have them. He feels obligated to let the public know both what he sees from a scientific perspective as well as from a biblical research. Currently, Stan is working on Tesla-based energy system and several propulsion projects. He's giving radio interviews and is an active partner in Deo Enterprises, LLC, and is the CEO of Halo Orbital Technologies, LLC. Dr. Stan Deo, welcome to the program. It is an honor to have you here, sir.
Thank you, Robert, but it's not doctor, it's just mister.
Well, I apologize for that. I see you as a great mind.
Well, thank you for that. Appreciate the promotion. Boy, a lot of stuff to talk about, isn't there?
There's so much to talk about. I don't know where to begin. Your background speaks for itself. Working for Edward Teller must have been quite an experience, though realizing that being part of such a large organization, working, with that type of technology must have been extraordinary in and of itself. But really, what's more pressing than anything else is really what is happening on the planet right now. The things that I have seen have been unprecedented, and I have never witnessed anything like this. Though I am only 45 years old, I have enough experience to realize that the volcanic activity, the earthquake activity, just the tsunamis that we've had on this planet have been unprecedented. They've really never been heard of, at least in my lifetime or your lifetime. I would assume in most people's lifetimes, there are extraordinary changes taking place, and people keep relating to the Mayan calendar, saying, "Well, it's 2012; it's the Mayan calendar." I look at this as a greater culmination of things as we are, passing through the rift that we are going through. Planet X is a very, very big thing. I've seen so much information on this. I just don't think that it cannot not be possible. In other words, I believe it's absolutely true and it's there. And I think it is part of the cause of what is happening on this planet.
Well, okay. Yes, there are a lot of things happening. And I do think back to the time of the Santorini explosion and the tsunami and ash cloud and various things that happened there with the ensuing earthquakes were probably bigger than the one over in Sumatra. But that was so far back that people have forgotten it. Erased memory has wiped it out. I do think we'll see similar type explosions in our lifetime. And I'm keeping my eye on two sites. One is in the North Island of New Zealand at Lake Taupo, which is really a caldera with water in it. And that, if it erupts like it did back around 87 AD, it threw up ash clouds so large that in the northern hemisphere in China, the astronomers recorded 3 days of darkness just from the ash from the explosion. Now, it's making signs of becoming active again. The local GNS people down near the USGS for New Zealand have put monitors in to monitor temperature at the bottom of the lake, on top of the caldera, the cap of it. And they're watching as close as they can. What may happen is that the dome may fracture there, and the water of Lake Taupo will sink down into that crack and hit a pool of magma, and that will cause an extremely large steam and fire. Pyroclastic type flows will come from it, as well as an explosion, but it will sink in first and then explode. Now that's one, and the other is Yellowstone. There's been activity there in the northwest corner in a new vent that they discovered here in, I believe it was February of this year. They've been keeping a lid on the monitoring of it, so it's hard to get data, but I did get some data leaked out from the university people that were partially connected to it, and so I'm able to tell you that they are monitoring Yellowstone for activity as well, a serious activity. Now those two things there are current day events which might certainly dwarf the Sumatran earthquake and might get closer to the Santorini explosion. There are so many other things going on, though, with the sun in particular, that this is real and present danger, clear and real and present danger, from coronal mass ejections and all kinds of stuff from the sun. They're just, you know, I mean, look at the droughts we're having across the planet, and then we're having floods in other places, which is not normal.
Well, right. In Australia, I mean, in 2 years in a row, unprecedented flooding. It's been extraordinary, as well as, I believe, in some parts of Vietnam and China as well.
Yes, it's all over the planet. And as I said, the extreme droughts and extreme flooding and weather are going to move all over the planet into places that they don't normally reside, which is, in essence, playing havoc with climate temporarily. And it will normalize again, I suppose, within the next solar cycle, solar sunspot cycle. But right now, it is causing extremes of weather that we've never seen before. And the sun is the prime driver of this. The Planet X and the discussions aside, the heat from the sun and the various other radiation levels that are coming from the sun that are new are heating up our planet at an extraordinary rate. It's not global warming from mankind's efforts. It's global heating from the sun. And with our magnetic field weakening on the Earth, this may also remove our ionospheric shield, which shields us from a lot of the solar and galactic radiation. That, in the ultraviolet range, can produce skin cancers. It can burn you like severe sunburn within minutes of being exposed to it. And we've already seen examples of this from people calling us from an island off the northeast shore of South America, on the right-hand corner there, when the North Atlantic anomaly, which is an area where the ionosphere is very thin, when the edges of it moved out far enough, I think it was 3 years ago, the edge of it allowed ultraviolet radiation from just the sun to get in and hit the people on these islands, and they were ringing us saying, you know, our children are getting nausea in school and being sent home. It feels like pins and needles sticking into our skin when we walk into the direct sunlight. What's going on? And that was what was going on, and that was just a minor taste on the edge of this hole, which, you know, spreads out and diminishes on the square from the South Atlantic anomaly location. That's going to be all over the planet if our magnetic field does do its reversal in the next few months or next decade sometime. That reversal will, during the reversal process of the North and the South Pole flip-flopping, there will be a point where the magnetic field is zero. And when it's zero, there's no ionosphere to protect us at all, and plants, trees, people, livestock, everything are going to get bombarded with sunlight of the dangerous kind when that shield is removed. And until it is returned, the whole planet's in danger. As you know from biblical prophecy, it does say that the sun, the heat of the sun, will burn up a third of the trees and the grass on the earth during the periods of judgment. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, can I ask you this, Stan? Will, I mean, it also talks about that the planet stopped rotating and there was darkness for 3 days. Well, I'm assuming that there would be also, well, as light for 3 days.
Well, now, why would you assume that?
Well, I mean, if there's darkness for 3 days, I mean, once...
What are you quoting? What passage are you quoting?
Well, I wasn't quoting a passage. I've heard this described in the Bible that there would be no sunlight for 3 days.
It doesn't necessarily mean that the planet would stop rotating, though, because if it did that, we'd all fly off. But what is going to happen, I think, is that we're going to see a massive amount of sunspots occur altogether, and this will diminish the light coming to us from the sun, and there will be clouds of ejecta, hot plasma gases thrown off of the sun, so many that it will make dust between us and the sun. And that will, as the Bible says, it'll be like looking at the sun through a sackcloth of hair, which is a coarse weave, you know, sackcloth of hair, and it has fine little points of light all over, but mostly it's dark. And that's what happens when the surface reaction, nuclear reaction on the sun changes. It's a very short-term event, and I don't know if it's normal in all stars, but for this to happen, in essence, the magnetic fields of the sunspots have to just suddenly go ape, flip-flop all over the place, turn upside down, and make, say, 95% of the sun dark to our visible light, but emitting all kinds of other electromagnetic radiation at us. That could last, you know, for that three-day period, and that could be why there's darkness and why the moon turns to blood during that time, because the sun's gone dark, because that reduced amount of light coming will apparently be in the red spectrum, that what we see, and that'll be reflected through the sunlight will come through that and look like blood red.
Interesting. Also, I know that our magnetosphere is at a basically an all-time low, and it has been disintegrating for decades. When our magnetic shield basically breaks down, this is when all this will occur, I'm assuming, correct?
I think so, and I'm cautious on that in saying this, because the sun does undergo polarity reversals itself, and the planets do as well, but on a different time scale. I don't know whether it's quick or as frequent as the sun does, but this can happen. The damage can happen to us even without the magnetic field being weakened. It can be so strong it punches right through. So whether we have a magnetic field reversal that causes this problem and opens us up to the radiation, or whether the radiation burst is just so great. But the magnetic field is weakening. You are right about that. And I've been doing tests here and having associates do tests all over the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, mainly in Australia. I've had them doing it at the northern tip of Alaska as well, up near the North Pole, testing the magnetic field and the vertical spin components using a battery, car battery, and some vertical wires and some tests. And we've been finding miniature reversals of the alignment of atoms that make up our magnetic field over the last 3 to 4 years now. About every 18 months or so, they seem to reverse. And this is an instability in the atoms, which is reflected in the copper wire that we, you know, hang vertically from a ceiling and run the test with. The wires twist when you put a strong current from a battery through them, and they twist one way in the Northern Hemisphere and they twist the other way in the Southern Hemisphere. But in the last 3 to 4 years, they flip-flopped three times, where the Southern Hemisphere's guys would go backwards to what they normally did, and ours would go backwards to what we normally get. There's something weird about that. It's a new phenomenon. We're trying to make a model of that, you know, word and mathematical model to explain to people and to us what is causing this. But we think it's affecting gravity as well.
Well, and another question, and it's related to gravity, is that when we do have this magnetic flip, would it also mean a physical shift that's going to take place, and in what degree, really, would it be? Because, you know, I've heard so many different descriptions of how this might occur, and, you know, because none of us have ever seen this physically on this planet, because we only live, you know, 70, 80, 90 years at best, there is really no
precedent.
Yes, there's no precedence, exactly. But listen, we're going to go to a quick break, and I want you to answer that right after we come back from the break. So look, everybody stick with us. This is the Whole Agenda Radio Show. I'm your host, Robert Pepino, and you're listening to my guest this evening, Stan Dale. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back, everybody, to the Whole Agenda Radio Show. I'm your host, Robert Pepino. And if you're just joining us right now, you are listening to my very special guest, Stan Dale, who held an above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI as part and as an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology. And we've been talking about it. I just jumped right into it. And I'm sorry, Stan, I jumped right into it in regards to the Earth change, because I think it's so pressing, and things are ramping up so much right now. And I asked you the question of magnetic pole reversal to physical reversal. Is it going to be a combination of both, or one or the other?
It could be both. The if it does happen that the physical shift of the crust occurs, I don't know that it'll be a total reversal, but I do. I have read ancient documents or reports on ancient documents that said that the sun used to rise in the west. And if that is the case, then there is a flip-flop of the planet. This is not unheard of. Looking at Venus, which is, we think, a planet that was captured in an inner orbit after being, it might have even been a moon of one of the larger Jovian, moon group for Jupiter. But whatever, it is spinning backwards, which indicates it may have come in upside down, and it will gradually slow down and flip-flop over and go the right way like the rest of the planets in the solar system. So yes, we could have something cause the, whether it be the magnetic field or the gravitational field change, or the approach of some larger mass into the inner solar system. Something could cause that to happen, and if it does, we're going to find that gravity loses its natural orientation, and people almost want to walk sideways when that happens. There'll be horrific winds, super cyclones, and flooding and lightning storms and hail like you've never seen before, and the jet stream dipping down into the surface of the earth and hitting hot spots, and with freezing cold coming down from the jet stream. These are called microbursts from the upper levels. These things would happen, and it would be a terrible thing. I don't know whether these will all happen at once or over a period of a few years in the tribulation period we're talking about, or even much longer down the path when the Messiah is ruling the planet. But if that's the case, we don't have to worry about it, because it will be protected. But in the case that these things happen during the next decade, which I believe is probably going to include the 7 years of the Great Tribulation spoken of, we have to be prepared to endure that if we're here. And I'm one of these people that thinks that there will be a rapture, and that a portion of humanity will certainly be taken to a safe place in a different kind of body than we're in now, one that doesn't break or degrade. But there will be a lot of people here on Earth to experience this that are not saved, and they will be, a lot of them will be killed. About a third of mankind, at least, will be killed by these terrible disasters. It's just hard to know exactly, I mean, the order, if it's going to go in the order it's in the book of the Revelation and in older prophecies, or whether they will be a simultaneous type thing. But these things are all possible, right down to the alleged Planet X. I've done a lot of study on that from a mathematics and planetary orbital mechanics viewpoint, and I know where its main orbit would be, and how long it would stay in the inner solar system. Yeah, and I think if it's going to hit us anytime soon, it will come in through the southern side of the ecliptic plane of the sun, and will first be observed by Australia and South American observatories. Even private observers will see it. I don't know that it's, I'm pretty sure, in fact, that its magnetic field will not be what affects Earth most, and even its primary gravitational field. However, there's something called a second type of gravity called the organizing gravitational field, which is weaker, and it affects planetary orbits. And in that case, this interloper could come in and shake the orbits up of the inner planets from Mars right on into Mercury, without even being close enough to make gravity waves on or gravity tides on the Earth.
Well, I mean, I've read multiple articles in regards to the Jovian planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, that their axes have actually shifted. But of course, mainstream science will not, allow us to know that. If that's true and they have shifted, that would be, I guess that would the introduction of Planet X into the inner solar system, I'm assuming.
Well, now Neptune and Uranus and even Pluto, which is now called a moon or a minor planet, and there's another one out in the Kuiper Belt as well, all of them are disturbed by some mass out there. Their orbits are not where they should be. I've developed, or discovered, I guess would be a better word, the formula for our solar system, which allows me to quite logically determine where a planet can orbit. And there are several empty orbits in the inner solar system here, which don't hold planets now then, but they are stable orbital paths should a planet wish to occupy them. There is one out there that it's probably, I think it was around 75 astronomical units, I can't remember now, 75 times the distance Earth and beyond that. There's one that has a mean orbital radius, which if it were a perfect circle, would take 3,600 years to go around the Sun, which is that magic number of the alleged planet X. Now, that dadgum orbit is there, and I, no matter how I calculate it, it is there within 25 years, plus or minus. It's 3,600 years, as best and accurately as we can measure it and determine it. Now, that orbit is there, and a planet could be out at that distance, but tilted at an extreme angle so that it travels very fast in around the Sun and then back out and slows down way out on the far end of its elliptical orbit at that time. Now, when it's in the inner solar system, the figures show that it will transit right through the interplanetary orbits from about Mars, Earth, somewhere in there if it comes in. It will be arriving and leaving within a decade. And then be out of sight again. So it's about a 10-year window, maybe 11, depending on how I assign several variables to the elliptical orbit calculation. So I'm waiting to see if any of the Southern Hemisphere amateurs can pick up this object. Now, then I've heard reports that some have picked it up with red filters on their telescopes, looking for infrared.
Yes, yes.
And that does fit. It doesn't have to get, modern, classical physicists and astronomers say, oh, look, why would you worry about it being so far away? Its gravity is not going to affect us. But they do not understand containment gravity. It's a weak gravitational field that determines the orbit where clusters of atoms get together and form a planet or, a moon around a planet, this sort of things. I'm writing a paper on it. It's taken me a year and a half to get this far on it, to show people visually and mathematically, what is happening here. And this weak gravitational field might be weak by our standards, but it's strong by solar system standards. And disturbances of these weak orbital fields by other fields, intersecting with them, can change our orbit. And if it can put a wobble in our orbit, which can then affect our planet and possibly encourage it to flip-flop, like we're talking about.
Right. Well, and also, I was just thinking about, because you said wobble. Now, I know that the Earth also has its own wobble, and I've noticed myself some very bizarre behavior with, it would have to be the wobble of the Earth. I would say it's more accentuated, because I've seen now the Sun coming up slightly at different degrees as it's coming up in the east and setting in the west. And I know I'm not imagining this.
Well, I use a program on my computer here that allows you to calculate where the Sun and the Moon should rise, and it's, at the moment it seems to be working okay where I am, but I haven't checked it every day. Before we get too excited about where the Sun is rising and setting, we have to consult some fixed program where they can't mess with it, where it's offline, and see if it fits the traditional orbit seasonal deviations on the horizon. I've had people in some Asian countries writing that the shadows on their gardens that they tend to year round are in the wrong place. It may well be, but it might be that this wobble is not constant and is more accentuated in certain days than others. And if I'm not checking it or you're not checking it, we're not going to see it.
And that's a very good point. It's not like I watch it every single day, but I have noticed it being out of the norm because I am at certain places at a certain time of the day. That's just a habitual thing. So I ended up noticing this, and I actually told a friend of mine. I said, "Look, the sun is it's not where it's supposed to be." Now I'm assuming that's the Earth wobble. But I'm not a scientist by any means, but I'm just being an observer, and I found that very strange and out of the norm.
Robert, yes. Let me tell you something now that you've just reminded me of something. When I was still back in Australia, I had a very lucid dream vision, a night vision, which part of it showed me arriving back here in the United States. At that time, I hadn't planned to come back. And descending down to the earth in western Colorado region here and waking up a bunch of watchmen who were asleep in their pup tents there to tell them to go back and tell their people that it's about to start now. But the interesting thing was, as I recounted the dream and wrote it down, I said it was dark around us where we were, and there were these falling embers over toward California in the northern pre-dawn sky. Now think about this. The pre-dawn sky, you know, sunrise coming up from the east, we might see it over there, but I was looking at the sunrise to come over California from the west in the dream vision. And it suddenly, it just reminded me that that's spooky.
Yeah, it is spooky. Stan, I want you to hold it right there. We're coming up on a quick commercial break. All right. So look, everybody stick with us. This is the Whole Agenda Radio Show. I'm your host, Robert Rapino. My very special guest, Stan Dale, will be right back after this break. And welcome back, everybody. This is the Whole Agenda Radio Show. I'm your host, Robert Pepino. And if you're just joining us right now, you are listening to my very special guest this evening, Stan Dale. And Stan Dale has held an above-top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was part of an exclusive black project headed by Dr. Edward Teller, specializing in the development of flying saucer technology in 1969. And I'm sure this audience is very, very familiar with you, Stan. And again, we've been talking about regards to what is happening on the planet because it is so prevalent. It really is the number one thing that is being discussed right now worldwide.
Hey, listen. While you were in the break, I just got a notice from NASA here. This is today's notice. You'll get it on their site and their science news. The WISE satellite, the Survey Explorer WISE, has doubled the number of potentially hazardous asteroids that could affect the Earth. They're roughly at around 4,700 of them, plus or minus about 1,500. But these are with a diameter of about 330 feet or close to that figure. And they've only located about 20 to 30% of them, even though they can see that their presence is there mass-wise. They haven't located them all to calculate their orbits. And this is rather stunning because it's doubled the number of low inclination asteroid orbits, which are, you know, roughly aligned with the plane of Earth's orbit, which are therefore able to strike us if things disturb them or just in their normal orbits now. So the biblical thing about a star falling in, which is a bright thing, an asteroid falling into the sea and killing a third of the life, et cetera, et cetera. This may be something like one of these asteroids actually hitting us, and
That's unbelievable.
I know. We know a few of them have slipped by in the last 5 or 6 years, and they tell you about it a day or so afterwards. Oh, by the way, we didn't know this one was coming, but it zipped on by. I just thought we'd tell you it's okay now.
Right. Don't worry about it until it hits us, right?
Well, I suppose there's wisdom to that logic. Everybody stays happy, and if it does hit, it won't matter. But
well, you know what? Speaking of that, I was just thinking about this. Okay, if where Planet X is coming through on this 3,600 year cycle on this elliptical orbit, would it make sense? And I don't know this, Stan, but I'm asking you. Would it go through the Kuiper Belt? Would it affect the Kuiper Belt? And would it bring a massive amount of debris and asteroids along with it?
Well, if its inclination is 23 to 30 degrees or even more to the ecliptic plane of the Sun, I don't think it will impact the Kuiper Belt. However, the Kuiper Belt is just a concentration of a lot of mass objects that are way, way out there at the edge of our solar system, which the edge of it is not like, you know, the Kuiper Belt. That's just a midway stopping point. We're looking at one parsec, the distance light travels in 1 year to get across our galaxy. That's how, our solar system. That's how big it is. It's massive. The effect is way out there, and there, it's like a big globular cluster with a star in the middle of it. And if you think about it, if we're 4 or 5 light years from our nearest star, then our star's field, you know, being in diameter about 1 light year, means that 1/4 that distance is the size of our a whole net effect of our solar system, which is more spherical in shape than flat disk. The flat disk spin part of it is only part of what happens, and the rest of this ecliptic plane bends up north and south to the Sun's poles and forms this big kind of flattened, thinly populated with mass globular thing. Like a cell almost.
Well, it would make sense. I mean, yeah, if you look at it, the structure of our solar system or anything else, it pretty much would resemble an atom, I'm assuming.
Well, yes, in a lot of ways. The Rutherford model of the atom, like, you know, a pie or pudding in the middle of it with little raisins stuck in that are protons and neutrons, that's not the way it is. It is definitely more of a high-speed spinning thing, which is like a galaxy or a solar system in micro version. And the structure of the electrons and shells and things are basically like planetary orbits that can contain one or more, you know, electrons in them, and there are corresponding anti-spins in the core of atoms. What I was getting to with this, the shape of the solar system, is that if Planet X is not interfering with the Kuiper Belt directly, it may be interfering with some of the mass distributed up way up above the ecliptic plane out of sight, and therefore not getting the light that we need to see it, and it may disturb things up there like comets. You know, icy debris up there, something that comes along with it, but not necessarily from the Kuiper Belt.
Okay. And there's been so much activity in regards to, you just mentioned, comets. Within the last 2 or 3 years, it's been extraordinary. Comets imploding into the Sun. I mean, this has really been unprecedented and unheard of.
Well, yes and no. We're just now getting the instrumentation and satellite imagery to let us see more of this happening. If you go back 200 years, did it happen then? We don't know. You know, we were still riding horses and driving buggies around the joint.
Right.
It was hard to see with the telescopes in those days. So I don't know whether it's an exceptionally new phenomenon. Certainly, since we've been observing this Sun, I would say that it seems to be a rash of them. But how unusual that is, I don't know in the great scheme of things.
All right. Well, I have another question for you. All the bizarre and strange noises that have been heard planetary-wide. I mean, this is some really disturbing stuff because I've never heard of anything like this ever happening.
The booms and the whining whistles and those moaning sounds.
Yes.
I think that they're probably from several sources. Some of them are truly underground activity. Over or underneath populated areas. I've talked to some of the witnesses here in the United States, and they said it was like it was coming up through the ground into their feet, the boom, boom, booms. Now, that could be underground tunneling because we've been building tunnels under the United States for many decades now for, you know, secret places. That could be explained that way. But then there are things that are like loud booms without lightning in the sky at night, over an area, and they definitely are airborne, and birds are killed by the impact of this and fall to the earth, you know, and a whole flock of them are dead from, a catastrophic impact with something hard that crushed their lungs. Now, that's a boom that might be created by electromagnetic effects. It could be like harp-type activity interacting with other harp systems by other countries, and that produces spurious results we have no way to predict. It could be problems with the magnetic and the electromagnetic field discharging, but in that case we would have seen flashes, so that's probably not it. The long moaning, whining sounds that they reported in Russia and various other places, they're certainly eerie sounding things. Those could be low frequency whistlers that occur in the ionosphere, and again, that's not normal.
Well, what would create that, though?
Well, it could be problems in our magnetic field weakening and the activity of the solar wind on our magnetopause. You know, at the end of March, the Japanese National Institute of Information and Communications Technology Group, the NICT, had to stop using the supercomputer they were using to generate a simulation of our magnetopause, our magnetic sphere of the Earth, as the solar wind hit. They were taking data from the U.S. satellites and from everybody's satellites, putting them into a supercomputer, and making a real model. I think it was about every 30 minutes, they were publishing a color model showing the compression of the Earth's magnetic field by the solar wind. But just before they shut down, at the end of March, after so many, you know, months or years of doing this, they shut down. And it was at a time that the solar wind it was accompanied by a coronal mass ejection. It hit the Earth perfectly, and it bent the compression wave of our magnetic field so that it wasn't sun side when it hit. It caused a reflection backside compression wave in the magnetic field of the Earth.
On the Earth. I saw that.
Okay.
I did see that.
Now, that suddenly, as that happened, they said, oh, we're off air, all of our historical records are not available. And their explanation may be true, but they said the lease period on the supercomputer they were using expired, and because it was a real-time service, it's not immediately available. They'll try to find another way to get it back online and let us know. Do you believe that? Do you
not
believe
for
that?
One second. Not for a second. I'm sorry.
No, you saw that.
An extraordinary lie, yes.
Yeah, you saw that. That was very unusual compression of the magnetic field. I've never seen anything that come in backwards like that. That was weird. So this could be causing some of the oscillations that we're hearing. I mean, and look at another thing. Sinkholes. I mean, we never heard about sinkholes when I was a kid. And now then they're an everyday thing. Round things falling in the middle of highways and neighborhoods and the middle of towns open up and drop down. Do you know what this is signaling to me? The planet is starting to expand again.
See, and that I've also said that as well. I think the planet is also getting ready to go through an expansion as well as a shift.
You know, on our website, I have a link. If people are listening to this, go to our website, standeo.com, standeo.com, and go down to where we're talking next to the microphone there. You can see tonight's show. And where it says show images, click on that. And you'll get to a page I've got there, where it talks about hollow planets and stuff. And you click on that, and it'll be a link over to Neil Adams' animations of moons and planets, I mean, real surface images, how he's shown they can shrink down and like 25-30% of what they are now, and all their continents and surface features fit together. So he's shown by real photos and compressing them back down how all the planets and moons that we know have gone through expansion. And they're not they're not contracting back. They keep on expanding.
And I've always asked that question myself, Stan, is that, look, nothing remains the same. Everything is in a constant state of change. And it would make sense to me, and I've repeatedly said this, it would make sense to me that if we had a smaller Earth, the creatures that were living at the time on a much smaller Earth would be much more massive in size.
Why?
Because of the concentration of oxygen versus the atmosphere that we live in now, which is so thin. I think it was much thicker back then.
Well, let me ask you this.
A heavier concentration.
Let me ask you this. If it's a heavier concentration of oxygen, then it was also a heavier concentration of all mass on the planet, which would have made the primary gravitational field of the planet much stronger, and therefore they had to have much more muscular structures to walk around happily in it, wouldn't they?
Right, exactly. Therefore, the massive size and the massive muscular and bone structure of these creatures that lived back then.
Absolutely. It makes sense, doesn't it?
To me, it makes absolute sense.
You know, if you've watched water fluid behavior, you can get, you can stir water around in a glass, let's say, and, you know, it makes a little vortex down the center of it, and you quit stirring and watching it. pretty soon it just slows down and slows down, and the vortex eventually stops and the water's level. And it's like a ballerina at the same time. She's spinning fast with her arms to her side, but as she moves her arms out, she slows down. So as things age, they unwind from this initial spin-up that made them what they were. Stars spin up and get bigger and eventually become red giants, some of them. Planets are going to spin up and eventually throw off the outer shell and maybe some shells underneath as they age and become debris. You know, maybe like an asteroid belt. Everything ages, and as it does, the spin slows down and it throws stuff off.
Right. You know, one question I have in regards to that, though, what about pulsars? I mean, these things are spinning at such a rapid rate of spin, it's incredible.
Right. Well, their energy concentrations are going to be there for a while. You know, flows of energy in the galaxy, in the universe, can be such that they can add together or subtract and produce, you know, large heat emissions as they interact. If they're adding together, they can generate these tremendously fast-spinning objects. Now, pulsars, okay, they're magnetars as well that pulse magnetic waves out and spin rapidly. The universe is a big place, and a lot of things happen there that are quite interesting. But one common factor I'm sure you'd agree with is if you look at a solar system or a star system, it has orbits and planets, and the planets, some of them have moons. Then you look at the galaxy. They have all these star systems rotating, again, in a vortex like it's going down a drain.
Yes.
And the drain's in the center. And then if you look at galactic clusters, they form patterns and swirls as well. And some are globular clusters, and some are, you know, what appear to be random, but I'm sure if we could see it from another angle, they would have shape or structure to them that would be spinning around a center somewhere. This seems, and even down at the nuclear level and the subatomic level, these things are spin. Everything seems to be spin in the fluid of space, which they now call dark matter, I think, instead of ether space, because they don't want to admit to what David Clark Maxwell was saying.
So would you say that spin creates gravity?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say it too. I mean, to me, it would make absolute sense.
Well, not only that, gravity is a two-directional thing. Well, gravity is a one-directional vector, but it's really caused by two things interacting. If you've got spin, you've got an outward thrust from the planet, and it reflects back in the fluid of space, and then you've got a downward thrust back to the planet, and it's the sum of those two hitting your very porous body and its atoms, which determine where you reside. If you're hydrogen, you reside way out there. If you're like us, you reside on the surface. If you're like iron and cobalt, or, you know, down in the center of the planet, or nickel, then you reside deeper down. But it's the sum of the wave pushing you out and the wave reflecting back. And that depending upon the density of your atoms, you move closer to the center of the gravitational field or further away. In fact, let me just see if I've got that here. In the Cosmic Conspiracy. I do. If you go to that images page and you click on the picture of the Cosmic Conspiracy, the second row in the middle picture says illustration of bidirectional gravity, and then you click on that and you'll see from the Cosmic Conspiracy book how I explained how two forces cause you to reside at a certain radius, which is where we are on the surface. Wow. It's there. Anyway, sorry, go on, Robert.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. I mean, it's just extremely fascinating. We could go on for hours, and I very much want to have you back on this broadcast, but I would spend the next 5 minutes real quick talking about the economy and the underground bases. You know, to me, anyway, Stan, it's more than obvious that, you know, the Illuminati, the government official, we can call them whatever they want at this point. It doesn't really matter. They have all these underground bases. We know they built them. The governments do not do things without reason, and I think to me it's more than obvious what they have prepared for at this point. Do you think they know an absolute time and date of when this thing is going to occur?
Which thing? Sorry, there are a lot of.
I'm sorry. When basically we go through the pole shift. Excuse me.
Well, certainly they have access to more data than the average person does, so they might know that it's getting close, but there are a lot of other things that they're watching as well. You know, I'm in favor of a world government run by a being that is perfect and doesn't belong to any political party or religious group or whatever.
I agree.
Okay, I'm not against a true harmonious one world order where everyone gets fair share, you know, fair go, get to work, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But man cannot do this. Yet man, the Illuminati, have tried. And sadly, they tried because they like power. And the logic says we can't have another nuclear war. We've got, you know, another war, which is nuclear. We can't have that. It would destroy so much of the planet, it would possibly wipe out humanity and a lot of animal life, and you know, just would not be the way to go to keep the planet and the cultures intact. So they have tried to set up this new world order with that objective being their altruistic side. Sadly, what happens is that when they get up to that level of power, they start to believe their own press releases that they can do no wrong and that they're right, and it's their destiny to rule us rather than to help us. So they do have access to technologies. I know that firsthand, that have not yet been released to the public. And I'm sure they've got a lot more than I knew about at the time. And it's sad because it's hard to defeat their argument about the need for unity in the planet, you know, so that we have a uniform economy and uniform health care and uniform protection of the planet and all this kind of stuff and stop war. But they're not going to be able to do it because of their own human failings.
And I concur with that statement. And I would almost go to the point of they have gone very sadistic and satanic. You know, not all of them, but a good faction of them. And they believe that they, you know, they are our absolute rulers. I absolutely disagree with their behavior and their actions towards us. But I also believe that there is, you know, we have an extraordinary amount of extraterrestrials that have been coming and going from this planet for a very long time. And I think they have the ultimate say-so of really what happens to us as a human race.
Well, yeah, and when you say extraterrestrials, I'm wondering if they're not previous terrestrials.
Right.
You know, from even the Bible talks about the prior existence of civilization on the earth, or, you know, earth had become waste and void, which meant it had been destroyed from a previous good existence. And that's first line of Genesis. So I think that these beings are the fallen ones spoken of in the legends and in the stories in the Bible, referencing the Garden of Eden and the angelic conflict in the heavens above us. Now, I also think that a lot of these beings could be from other worlds that the Lord has placed there, but our world and our population of humans are set here for a particular purpose, to settle a challenge in the heavens, a parallel universe, whatever you want to call it, where the immortal beings live. And they could be right next to us and we wouldn't even see them because our matter could pass back and forth in this parallel or concentric universe theory that's current in the cosmological physics centers. But I don't think we're looking at extraterrestrials that are like just from another planet come over here and interfering with us. We're looking at beings that are here for a reason, created by the Creator that created us, and call him an extraterrestrial if you want to, because he's not on the planet.
Right.
You know, he's in another level that the Bible speaks of. There are at least 3, maybe 7 levels to existence. And that's what I would call a parallel universe, or universes. So,
well, I definitely agree with you, and I usually use the terminologies, you know, our cosmic brothers and sisters. I, you know, that's just a standard extraterrestrial, because that is such a
common thing.
Yeah, a common thing, staple word that has been used for so long. But you're absolutely right. But because we are all part of the same thing, we are all part of one. We are part of the greater cosmos that exists, you know, through this universe and, you know, through parallel universes. So, I mean, at this point, we know so little in regards to, you know, what really be, what lies beyond what we truly know. And our behavior as human beings is, to me, intolerable. Our actions are intolerable. Our behaviors are intolerable. There have been very few men on this planet who have tried to bring humanity into, you know, to the right way of thinking. Of course, Jesus Christ and Gandhi and Buddha, and there's been several on this planet. Unfortunately, for the whole of humanity, they disregard this.
You know, I'm of the opinion, certainly there have been a lot of you know, Buddhist teachings, many of them parallel to what they're taught in the New Testament, but I think that Jesus was a unique being in that he was a hybrid between,
yes,
you know, the Creator and a human woman. And the virgin birth doesn't bother me at all. I think that that's probably just, causing the baby to form without intercourse. We look at artificial insemination now, but that's just a crude way to do it. So whatever this was, the spiritual side, the real being, formed a hybrid being, and that's why he is in essence our doorway, our gateway into the parallel universe, where things are a lot better and where our bodies don't wear out and fall apart. Our bodies here are like the planet. They are corruptible. They age and die and break and, get sick. But it's like we're in a virtual reality where this battle in the heavens is being waged here rather than in the parallel universe, so there's no collateral damage there. We are in this virtual war game, and we are being allowed to participate in it to show, what would have happened in the real heavens, above us where real beings live, if they had been allowed to create the chaos that they've created here.
Yes. Yes, anyway, you're absolutely right. Now, Mr. Dale, I want to thank you very, very much for being on this broadcast. I would very much like to have you back on. There's so many other questions I'd like to ask you, and I enjoy talking with you so much.
My pleasure, Robert. You've got a great a wide spectrum of knowledge yourself, and it's very nice to talk to someone that's been thinking like I have.
Well, thank you very much. And really fast, I want you to give out your information so people can go to your website and get your information and your upcoming shows.
Upcoming shows. Well, Friday night, I'm doing an away lecture in Colorado Springs at the Highland Preparedness Network group there. You can look them up or click to see where they are on our website at standeo.com. Website there, Holly updates that every day. She gets up at 4:30 in the morning and starts looking for news through news agencies all over the planet to find news stories that we need to read, those of us that are aware of what's happening and want to try to get along with the future as best we can and do the right thing. So my hat's off to her 6 days a week, well, sometimes seven. She is up there doing it while I'm still sleeping.
Bless her. Well, Mr. J, I want to thank you very, very much again, and I will get in contact with you, and I'd love to have you on next month if possible.
All right, Robert, let's play it by ear and see what day's good.
All right, thank you very much. And everybody, this has been the Whole Agenda Radio Show. My very special guest, Stan Deo, and he will be back on with us. I promise you that. I want to thank you. God bless you. Everyone, take care of yourselves, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Bye-bye.